This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell from the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Chloe Hooper, welcome to Better Reading.
Wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
So a lot of you listeners out there know that I have a crush on Chloe. I talk about her quite a lot at Better Reading. I do, Chloe. You probably don't know that.
Wow, I'm so flattered and excited. Where can we take this, Cheryl?
Well, I'm going to start with this. So Dan Ruffino is a good friend of mine. He is the managing director of Simon Sister. Anyway, he was over for dinner a few months back before I went. I did a long stint in San Francisco recently for 3 months. So it must have been in November, December. He came around and he said, hey, I've got your present. This is the new Chloe Hooper. It's a proof. Read it. And I was like crazy excited. But in the madness of trying to pack up and go, I didn't read it before I left. So I took it with me to San Francisco. And for some reason, I didn't read it when I was in San Francisco.
There are just like books, you know, you pick them off the shelf at the right time and you, mm-hmm. you know, you, it's so strange when they find you, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
And so then when I was coming back, I picked it up again, the proof, and I hadn't read it and I had to come back quickly because my mother wasn't well. So I had a couple of days to pack up and come home. And I didn't read it on the plane, even though I had it in my handbag. Anyway, when we got the call that Mum's last rites were going to be read, I thought, okay, this is going to be a long few days at the nursing home. For some reason, I picked it up and I took it with me. And that was on the Sunday. And Mum died on the Saturday, the following Saturday, and it was my solace.
Oh, Cheryl, that's... makes me feel it was worthwhile writing it. Thank you so much.
Mm. So you're even extra special than what you were. Okay, let me introduce you. Chloe is the Melbourne-based author of award-winning books, including The Arsonist and The Tall Man, which won the Victorian, New South Wales, West Australian and Queensland Premier Literary Awards, as well as an Ed Kelly Award for Crime Writing. She is also the author of 2 acclaimed novels, A Child's Book of True Crime and The Engagement. So today we're talking about her recent book. It is a memoir and a letter, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yes. Bedtime
story. Written for you and to my sons.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's an enchanting and beautifully illustrated story about how Chloe delved into stories and literature to help tell her young sons of her partner's diagnosis of illness. It is, you know, Dan reckons that I would read anything you wrote. And, you know, even if you just wrote words about nothing, I would love them. There's a truth in that. There is definitely a truth in that. However, you don't do that. It's not just the story. I'm kind of addicted to your style of writing.
Well, I think, you know, obviously this book, we found out in our family in 2018 that my partner, Don Watson, had a rare blood cancer and the prognosis wasn't good. And, you know, being two writers, there's a sort of, you start to think when there's a fatal illness sort of is in, you know, in your sight about inheritance. And I guess I felt, well, we're rich in stories if nothing else. And so I really turned to the bookshelf to try and find something to tell the kids, but I guess the pleasure for me and maybe some of the solace that you found when you were reading the book was also the world of children's literature. I mean, they're not really just written for children, these stories, and they are full of enchantment and riches and the sort of glimmer of miracles. And I think that as adults reading about these books, there's also a kind of where they're wired into us a little bit, these tales. And so we go somewhere where we feel kind of held. Mm. I don't know if that answered your question, Cheryl.
I think so. I want to firstly start with, I didn't know what to expect because I didn't know what it was about. And I think when I wrote, I think I wrote you an email from the nursing home?
You sent me a lovely, lovely note because we're Instagram friends, which, you know, the best friends, basically. Yeah.
But, you know, at that point I couldn't even remember what the book was called because I was in a world of other pain and I was just reading and getting lost in it. But when I looked at it yesterday in view of speaking to you today, there was another penny drop moment for me. It's like, oh, okay, now I know what's called Bedtime Story. I don't know if I registered that while I was reading it. But it is what you've done in writing a memoir or a letter to your son is you have interwoven the magic of storytelling.
Well, it's I guess it makes you realise that for millennia, you know, there's been an adult and a child together in the dark, and at night is when we tell stories, and we tell bedtime stories to entertain and to instruct and to console and to control. Mm-hmm. But it's very rich pickings once you start looking at the tales that we tell children or that we were told as children. Mm.
Firstly, I want to ask you, so when you got Don's diagnosis, were you thinking about writing about it then? At what point did you think, I need to write about this experience?
Well, I suppose that, you know, writers often, I think, can take a notebook into a difficult situation, Cheryl, and it makes it a tiny bit easier. And I guess that I've gone on various assignments with my notebook and, you know, scribbled little notes where of anything that sort of strikes me as sort of, you know, interesting. And no, I certainly didn't sort of immediately think of writing about this situation, but quite quickly, I mean, I guess the way that people keep a diary, you know, by sort of externalizing what's happening, you have a sense that you can control it in your own head. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was starting to sort of, you know, make notes about what was happening to us. And then I thought, actually, look, there is a book in this because other people are going through it. Other people are looking for ways to talk to their kids about life and death, and to do so in ways that don't kind of haunt them. And I thought, oh, look, there's a short book here. But the more I dived in, it expanded, and you know, now, as you see, the amazing Anna Walker, who a lot of your listeners will love for her books, you know, I was so fortunate that she agreed to sort of even illustrate this in places.
I thought it was a marriage made in heaven, actually.
Oh, it's like it was so dreamy. And the book's designed by Alison Colpoy, who is also, you know, an amazing star illustrator in her own right. So I was working with the dream team.
You know, I'm very familiar with Anna's work, and I don't know her, but I've admired her just through her work. And I wondered, so when you chose Anna as the illustrator, you were choosing a children's book illustrator.
Purposely. I was. Yes. And but I, you know, it's funny, Cheryl, I rang Anna, and I mean, Anna would get asked to do things all the time. And, you know, I was kind of like, hear me out. and I said to her, one of the things that I love in your illustrations is actually often on a page there'll be a window, you know, and the main characters are there, but in the background there's a window, and she will do a picture of sky, you know, or a tree that is just so beautiful. And I said to her, I love the way that you do weather. And I didn't know that for her that would be like sort of saying Rumpelstiltskin's name. She was just like that. She said, that's like my fantasy, is to do a book which is only of weather. And we kind of both got what we wanted.
So it's just beautiful. And the nuance of that, I really, really enjoyed. Often I was reading it in a dark room, but, you know, I would go to the window and have a look at the illustrations, and they were beautiful. There were moments in that book where I laughed out loud, and you're probably not going to like this, but one of them was where Don had usually done the cooking in the evening.
And
you said something like, you don't learn these things overnight. I love that so much. I was laughing.
I'm glad. I'm glad you were, because you don't want it to be only just a depressing book. And I mean, rightly or wrongly, already got I have a dark sense of humor. And I think that you sometimes just have to laugh, because otherwise you'd cry.
Oh, exactly.
But yeah, no, I'm still absolutely. I mean, so Cheryl, in our house, he is the cook. And I mean, you're thinking all sorts of things, and some of the thoughts are very high-minded, and others are just completely selfish. And I thought, you can't die, because I will have to learn how to cook, and I cannot, I can barely boil an egg.
Yeah, we can't navigate that, I'm telling you. And our children are used to
it. I'm not proud of that.
Yeah, it is the truth. So let's go back a little bit. So let's go back to the diagnosis. And, the image of the doctor that told you about it, the pregnant doctor, I think it was, and the fact that she doesn't read Australian writers. I loved how you threw that in. I really liked how you threw that in. I was instantly
dismissed. Thanks, Cheryl. a brilliant doctor. Don is still thinks I was too harsh, but you know how some doctors are. They're kind of amazed that you can actually, you know, speak in full sentences sometimes, you know, if you don't have a medical degree yourself.
Mm. No, I agree. And I think that so many of them talk down to you. But anyway, tell me about that and the shock of that, because it's one thing hearing it about yourself, but it's another thing hearing it about your partner. And I want to explore that a little bit. I want to know, you know, did Don know you were writing about it and how he felt about you writing about him? But yeah, tell me from that starting point.
I think that, I think anyone who's supported someone throughout a cancer journey, you need the support person to be there, because I think Don often was almost disassociating in those appointments. Like, it's just very hard to wrap your head around your own extinction. I mean, actually our brains are designed to not be able to focus on this horrible fact. I mean, we like to think of this as being something that happens to other people. But it was, you know, it's as the supporter, I mean, it's sort of a strange thing, because it's not about you. I mean, it's your partner's, it's your partner's life, and it's, you know, it's his sort of struggle, and grief is paramount. But at the same time, I suppose often, you do have to try to hold together the family and find ways to talk to the kids about this, and for different children of different ages, you know, there's information that's appropriate. Don did know that I was writing about this, and Cheryl, to be perfectly honest, it's expensive when somebody gets cancer too. So I suppose I was thinking I have to keep working. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, I think there was a moment, I feel like it was like a high noon moment where we, I picked up the pen faster than he did. And he said he felt actually slightly relieved that I would be doing it rather than him. And I think that he's very proud of me and this book, while also feeling a sort of a slight sense of embarrassment, because, you know, he feels conscious that he had this extraordinary escape, and the prognosis was very poor, but he is in remission. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are, you know, much sicker than he was, but, you know, I was living with him. So I've told the story about our family, and but it is one that I hope other people can get something from. Mm.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You didn't talk much about you and your grief, other than not coping with, you know, putting dinner on every night. You really kind of stepped back from that, I thought, in your letter to your son, that it was about the children and how you were, how they were going to cope with this news. And it was about Don, but I didn't, like, there wasn't much of your feeling about, because the partner and the supporter is equally is riddled with grief, right?
Well, I think that one of the ways to find a sort of comfortable distance for it was to sort of focus, I suppose, on what this meant for children, because I think as heartbroken as I was in that period where things looked very bleak, I guess I couldn't help often thinking of what this meant for our children's future. Mm. Yes. Mm. Mm. And my, I suppose future. Maybe my own grief felt a sort of slightly, you know, less pressing at that moment.
Mm. Mm. After I lost my mother, you know, it was a tough week, and I just fell into this like bottomless pit. But when I reflect about that now, and I think you might feel this as well, is that half of it, I would say, was sheer exhaustion.
That's so interesting. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in those situations, you're sort of working on adrenaline and you almost don't know how much you're holding together.
Mm. And you would have been the same. I mean, you're trying to hold together the family, you're dropping off and picking up to hospital. You know, chemo is brutal.
Yes, and you're trying to keep working, you know. So it's, you know, it's very demanding and demanding time. Mm. Mm. Absolutely.
Were you at all worried what Don would think of the final book? Were you worried about that?
I decided to, I mean, this is, you know, often a question when you're writing about people, you know, what are they going to think? And in the end, you have to write what feels true and right and do the best you can and then see how they react. And I'm grateful that he kind of, you know, let me have artistic license. So we didn't have a lot of conversations about changing anything. And I'm very grateful to him for that, because it is intimate, and as it should be, if it's, you know, as it's directed to our children.
Mm-hmm. And obviously your children haven't read the book yet, but you feel, when do you think would be the right time for them to read it?
It's funny, Cheryl. Our older son, Tobias, you know, for years he's been saying, when are you going to write a book for me? And I've said to him, well, look, this book is, you know, this is for you, you know, and it's in second person. So it's, you know, I think it starts, the opening line is, you know, you're about him lying in the dark. And he looked at the proof pages at some point and flicked through them and said, you know, I can't see my name anywhere. And
because I don't think you say his name. You say his brother's name, but you don't say his name.
Gabriel, I don't say his name. So I did say to him, don't worry, you're in there. And, you know, hopefully you won't have to see a psychiatrist about it in sort of 20 or 30 years. Yeah, yeah. But I'm not sure. I think that will be their choice when they pick this up. But I hope that it's a document that will explain to them a kind of a pivot point in our family's life and make sense of certain things. Mm. I mean, in a way, it's a kind of prayer for them as well. And it'll be there on the shelf if they want it or not.
Mm. When you got the news of Don being cancer-free, how did you think that, I mean, you didn't talk about, because the book wasn't about that, but then you're now talking to the kids about that. Tell me about that moment. Yes. When you came home and shared that with them, because that must be much, much easier to communicate, right?
Oh, of course. And, I mean, throughout, I guess, what made this year, 2008, more complicated was that that Tobias, our older boy's best friend's father, was diagnosed a few weeks before Don was. Mm. And
you wrote about that
in March. And this father died in November. So I think that Tobias, who was then seven, when did think that, you know, his father was going to die as well. And telling the kids that their dad was cancer-free was obviously, I mean, a feeling of being able to breathe again. But, once you've sort of, once the monsters come pretty close to the house, Cheryl, you're conscious that, there's a plot change that we avoided, but that also comes for everybody at some point. And now I try really hard to talk about, I think what I've learned is by talking to kids about death, and actually kids are natural philosophers. They like being included in a this sort of big philosophical mystery and being able to think about it. But by talking to them about our mortality, maybe we also have a better chance to realize how precious life is and to think about how we can lead our best lives. Mm. So, you know, that's definitely still, you know, an important conversation in our house.
Mm. Oh, my next question was going to be, is your life now as a family different to what it was? Has it changed fundamentally?
Look, I mean, it's strange also, Cheryl, to talk about this. You know, when I first started to look at the history of children's literature, I asked myself, well, what did people, you know, what were the bedtime stories in the ages of war and plague? And isn't that, you know, 2018 was this innocent age before COVID and the threat of nuclear war. So, you know, now I think all of our families have kind of changed, in the last couple of years. And I think existential questions are really, you know, at the forefront of lots of kids and parents and adults' minds. So, you know, I don't even mean to sort of say parent, because, I mean, we all have kids in our lives, whether or not we're biological parents or not, or hopefully we do. You know, yes, our life has changed, but it's changed also due to, having a kind of vigilance around COVID when someone in the house has got immunity issues, and just because, you know, the world feels like it's changed too in the last couple of years.
Mm, it has. It has. And I believe storytelling has become crucial, and readers are telling me that, you know, I mean, in terms of better reading, we are interacting more with readers than we ever have. And I think because people have taken solace in reading, say, a book like yours, like Bedtime Story, or just, you know, commercial fiction or whatever it is, people have turned to story. They really have.
Yes.
I've got to tell you, I really enjoyed some of Don's story, bedtime stories. It's like, wow, because I've got great nieces and nephews, and I tell stories like, you know, George and the Mortadella, but his were a little bit more intricate.
That's right. I need to I need to encourage him to write them all down, and you know, maybe he can come on this podcast and you know, with a new book of children's fairy stories.
Yeah, maybe he could. Do you?
But don't worry, Cheryl. I don't have any stories by the end of the night. All I can do is open, you know, I'm not going to say a bottle of wine. Open a book and really be you know, regaled by the beauty of the images and someone else's storytelling. So this isn't you're doing better than me if you've got sort of a story about George and the Mortadella.
I do. It's a favourite too, I might add.
Sounds very intriguing. Yeah. Maybe you should make a book as well.
Maybe. Okay.
But, you know, that's interesting too, because kids love stories about food.
They
don't
do.
They?
And, you know, and I mean, dogs.
Food and dogs. That's right. That's the best-selling combination.
But and I think also it's based on a true story, so I love that. Yeah.
Just the magical food in storytelling from, you know, Enid Blyton, the famous five, which is kind of verboten these days, but, you know, the all of the detail about the picnics that they would have through to kind of the Hogwarts banquets where food magically comes on plates and the very hungry caterpillar, you know, you realise how important food is to all of us, but particularly to children.
Mm. Do you know that thread that you were pulling through the book about the like, you know, the Grimm brothers, you know, E.B. White, and that something in that writer's life there was a death or a separation or a loss of parents or something, you know, these great stories came out of that. I see that a lot in writing now. Like there is a lot of writers that I speak with who have come to writing because of some sort of adversity, and they're not necessarily writing nonfiction; they're writing fiction.
Mm. Well, I think that you know, as I mentioned, you know, you can take your notebook into a difficult situation and then feel as though you're able to sort of better manage it in your own head by putting an experience into words. And you know, as I write in the book, one of the spells to stop a monster is to name it correctly. And so I think if you can kind of correctly describe the monster, you know, it's a way of freezing them momentarily and having some feeling of control. But, you know, obviously the other thing is kids don't yet know that magic spell. They don't often know the perfect word to describe a situation. So I guess that's why books for them are so important.
Mm. And stories so important. I remember when my dog died, and because I've got great nephews and nieces, and it's, you know, on a Monday I have both of them. Lucas's way of coping, he would say to me, "George has gone to China." He would tell me.
If it makes you feel better.
That's right. He was telling me the story of George on the plane, George eating dumplings, George, you know, and he won't be coming back because China's a long, long way
away.
That's
so fantastic.
It's great, isn't it? It was his coping mechanism, right?
Isn't that interesting? Yes, they really are. And I mean, children's books make you realise how important imagination is. Imagination is a serious business. Mm. And I hope your nephew keeps on going with being able to create stories like this, because that's, you know, it's through imagination that we can kind of change the world by having sort of a different vision of how it might be.
Mm. That's what you're doing. Chloe Hooper, thank you so much for your time.
It's been wonderful. Thanks, Cheryl.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play, or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, Join your local public library and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.